Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. There are a number of polls out there that will tell you approval ratings for Congress are at almost all-time lows. Wisconsin Congressman Ron Kind says that doesn't surprise him, that bipartisan politics have gotten out of hand. Today on Newsmakers, I'll talk with a La Crosse Democrat about the state and national political climate, but also about the Farm Bill, the situation in the Middle East, and the Mississippi River. I first asked Kind about the St. Croix River Crossing Project, a bill which President Barack Obama signed yesterday. The bridge connecting Houlton, Wisconsin to Stillwater, Minnesota, received rare bipartisan congressional support. Here's Kind.
Yeah, you know, it's time to build a bridge. I've been working on the bridge crossing up there for the last 16 years. The first time they actually talked about building a new river crossing up there was over 50 years ago. Right now we have an 81-year-old lift bridge. It's on its final leg. Everyone agrees that we have to have a new bridge up there. But in order to do it, according to the courts, you needed exempting language under the Wild and Scenic River Act, and that's what took so long. And that's what the legislation was based on, just exempting this new bridge from the Wild and Scenic designation that the river receives. It passed overwhelmingly in the Senate. It received wide bipartisan support in the House. And it's time to move forward on a major infrastructure project in a very dynamic, fast-growing region of the country, that area up in Wisconsin, Minnesota. It will create jobs in the short term, which is what we need today. And then long term, there's going to be continued economic development and job creation stemming from this new bridge going in. And 6 years ago, I put together a process called Resolve, where we get all the stakeholders at the table in order to reach consensus on the project. And at the end of 5 years of endless meetings, 26 of the 27 stakeholders signed off on the bridge design, the location, the cost, environmental mitigation that has to take place up there. And it was overwhelming, except for one that ran to court and required the legislation. But it was sited, I think, in a good location in the river, right next to a coal-burning power plant, right next to two major manufacturing companies. So it's the portion of the river that's hardly wild or hardly scenic. And so that was taken into consideration. And I also found that whenever you get Viking and Packer fans agreeing on anything, it's time to move forward on that issue. And that certainly was the case up in that region of our state.
And as you said, it will create some short-term jobs as far as construction goes. Yep. How else will it economically impact this area? It's a couple hours north of La Crosse, but how will it help people in this area and our neighbors to the north?
Well, you know, right now, for anyone who's been up in the Stillwater area during the summertime, if you have some high flood water, the lift bridge is up, no traffic can cross. During the summertime when boat traffic has to pass underneath it, the bridge goes up and no one can cross. And that would lead to traffic jams, sometimes as long as 2 miles. And that's cars sitting there fuming, carbon dioxide, dropping oil. It was a major environmental, not to mention the safety concern of possibly a safety vehicle having to cross that. So just on that basis alone. But again, it's a very large and fast-growing region. And that 81-year-old lift bridge just could not take the increased strain of increased traffic flows. So it's one of the fastest-growing areas of both Wisconsin and Minnesota. And you need an infrastructure system that can sustain that type of long-term economic growth and job creation. And I hear from folks up there that it could create anywhere from 6,000 to 15,000 jobs, just the creation of the bridge itself, along with the subcontracts and the ancillary jobs that will come from it. But in the future, with increased economic development, more businesses moving into the state, I mean, the potential is really out there for seeing tremendous job growth once the bridge is fully functional.
Are there any other Mississippi River projects or other river projects that are on your radar that you think could receive some bipartisan support?
Yeah, you know, Tim Walz and I have been talking a lot about the Winona Bridge. Obviously, that has been degraded as far as the safety analysis on it. We saw how it was shut down in the past year and the effect that had on traffic. People had to reroute all the way through La Crosse and then up the river again, and it ended up being an hour and 20-minute commute as opposed to just a 15-minute commute for most folks. And so there are issues there that need to be addressed. It's a major, again, transportation corridor linking our two states and the city of Winona. So we've had discussions with both departments of transportation and Federal Highway Administration of what can be done to either shore up that bridge so it is sustainable for many years or possibly replacing it.
What about with the locks and dam system? I know that not only the Army Corps of Engineers, but those involved in river transportation, you know, they say that it's a crumbling infrastructure, that the federal government really needs to act on funding it and fixing things. Yeah. Is there any talk within Congress about fixing the locks and dams?
There is, and it's a vital transportation corridor for us here in the upper Midwest. And the lock and dam system, much of which was built back in the 30s or so, it's been piecemeal trying to do the routine maintenance and repair on it. The Corps of Engineers, to their credit, have done a remarkable job of keeping them fully functional, but we're one major lock breakdown from a traffic jam, and it's going to be harder for us to export our products to market or bring products up to what we need. And not to mention the really multiple purpose that the river serves, not only commercial navigation, but tourism, recreation would be impacted as well. So I've been trying to work as much as we can within the existing Inland Waterway Trust Fund to help the Corps with the resources they need to continue to do the upgrades on, as you've rightly described, a deteriorating infrastructure. But it's also an indication of the larger tasks that we face as a nation. Most of our infrastructure is getting old and in desperate need of repair. And we've got bridges falling down in the United States of America, killing people. That's just untenable. And if we're going to have the long-term economic growth and job creation that we want and hopefully sustain, it also is going to require a 21st century infrastructure system that can support it. Yet this week in Congress, trying to move forward on a new highway transportation bill, that's been held up. And the typical reason is funding. Where are the revenues going to come from in order to support these projects? We know we have to do it. We also know we need the jobs right now. We should be working closely together in order to get it done, which can also help spur job growth when we need it the most.
Is it hard to make other members of Congress realize the importance of the river?
Well, again, it's telling that this week we saw the first barge coming up the river, and indicative of the weather that we're facing. But that was one of the reasons why, when I was first elected to Congress, I helped form the bipartisan Mississippi River Caucus in order to get members on both sides together so we can meet periodically, talk about the needs of what I think is one of the most vital national treasures that we have in America, which is the Mississippi River watershed area. And when you talk about the watershed area, you're talking about everything east of the Rockies and everything west of the Appalachian, which is a majority of the states that it affects. So part of my responsibility as a representative that has more miles on the Mississippi than anyone else is to spread that information, educate other members of both the House and the Senate about this vital transportation corridor, but the economic impact that it brings to all of our states. And it's not just river traffic, but it's the tourism, it's the recreational value. It has a tremendous economic impact, and the jobs that stem from it, not just here in the upper Midwest, but all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico.
And our next question for Congressman Ron Kind comes from Wisconsin Public Radio's Steve Roysom.
The governor unveiled the Grow Wisconsin Dairy 30 by 20 program. As a Congress member who's been dairy-minded pretty much your whole career, what are your initial thoughts?
Well, what we need and what I've been working on at the federal level is trying to develop some consensus nationwide on a national dairy policy. For too long, our dairy producers have been pitted against each other from farm to farm to region, and that has just made developing a national policy that much more difficult. And I remind people when I'm back home that agriculture is still the number one industry here in the state of Wisconsin and employs more people directly or indirectly than any other business, not only the producers but the processors, the infrastructure, the jobs that flow from that. And dairy is a large part of that. And we're unique here in the upper Midwest, given the climate, given the water-rich resources that we have up here, and what I view as very sustainable agriculture practices compared to other regions, that we should be able to maintain a strong position nationwide when it comes to not just dairy production, but overall agriculture. And we've got a dairy infrastructure system here in the state that supports the production that is occurring. And we need to be able to build upon that in order to keep the jobs here. So I think, you know, the governor working with them and also other state legislators who appreciate the significance of this, there are ways that we can form better, more meaningful partnerships from the federal, state, and local level in order to support production agriculture and make sure that it is sustainable as we move forward. But even agriculture now is diversifying. We've got a lot of organic production, a lot of farmers now who are smaller in size practicing sustainable agriculture, which is very exciting to see. We've got the largest organic co-op in the nation right in our backyard with Organic Valley, and they too are expanding and doing very well and creating more jobs in our region, which is exactly what we want to see them do. And they also come from it on a renewable energy point of view, which is neat. A couple farm bills ago, I included a provision in it to finally get up and going these methane digesters. So there's a way of better managing the manure that comes from dairy or cattle operations and convert that into energy. And I was glad to see Darylin now picking up that program and partnering with local farmers to establish more methane digesters right in our area. It just seems like a win-win-win on all levels. And now technology is catching up with that, so you don't need the 500 or 1,000-head dairy operation to make these digesters economically feasible. I mean, now with the technology, it could be a 50 or even 100-head cattle operation, and you could still make the numbers work for a methane digester on that farm.
Which could bring back the smaller farms?
Well, I hope. You know, there's been a trend for many, many years of greater consolidation in agriculture, and part of that was driven by the lenders saying you need to get bigger. Just for economies of scale purposes. And a lot of our farmers didn't want to get bigger. They were comfortable with that family farm operation, and getting bigger entails upfront capital costs and more work and more help in order to run the operation. And so there's been kind of a blend of those type of family farm operations to larger operations that we're seeing. But the other reality of it is the terrain and what can the terrain actually sustain. And here in western Wisconsin, we have a lot of coulees, a lot of bluffs, a lot of hills, not conducive to huge cattle operations because there's not enough space for them or the manure management. And we also need to make sure that our farmers are receiving the assistance they need to be good stewards of the land in order to reduce topsoil loss, in order to reduce the nutrient and sediment flows that would otherwise enter our water system and affect an ecosystem like the Mississippi River Basin. So I've been a huge champion of the conservation title in these farm bills. And they're volunteer, they're incentive-based land and water conservation programs. It's the largest public investment we can make in private land ownership by partnering with our farmers to help them develop environmental programs on their own farms. It's worked very well, and the demand is there for it. In fact, today, 3 out of every 4 farmers applying under one of these conservation programs are turned away because of inadequacy of funding. So it's not as if the farmers don't want to do it. It's just there's not enough resources in order to bring it to scale.
Where is the developing farm bill at this point?
Well, it's pending. You know, I've been chiming in already. It's up for reauthorization. It expires at the end of September, so ideally Congress should be working on it in the months ahead, although all eyes are on the Senate right now. The House, for some reason, is expecting the Senate to go first. Senator Stabenow, who heads the Agriculture Committee there, has been holding hearings with the intent to try to move a farm bill yet this summer, but I'm not sure if it's going to be achievable. Unfortunately, it takes 60 votes to sneeze these days in the Senate, so it's very hard to reach those supermajorities to get anything done. And I would like to see us start working on the farm bill because I've had some concerns with a lot of these programs that have not made sense in the past. Large taxpayer subsidies going to a few but very big agribusinesses, which doesn't make sense. It's not helping our family farmers back home. It is leading to greater consolidation in agriculture. It's making it harder for new beginning farmers to enter the occupation when the average age here in Wisconsin is about 59. And it's not fiscally responsible. We have paychecks going to addresses in New York City and in San Francisco and in Hollywood, California. These aren't even people who are working the farm as farmers. And yet a large part of the funding are going to those type of individuals in this country.
Anything about the farm bill that's maybe good?
Well, it is. Obviously, the conservation title I'd like to see at least protected and not degraded further because the huge demand is there. It's a win-win not only for the farmer to develop good, sustainable agriculture practices, but it's an entire win for the community in which they reside through better water management practices, habitat, wildlife. And again, you have to take a look at outdoor recreational activities in Wisconsin. That, too, has a huge economic benefit to our state. And there you need to partner with the landowners in order to make that viable. The nutrition component, I mean, hunger is on the rise in this country. You go visit Wafer here in La Crosse, and you see the huge demand that exist out there. And the Farm Bill is the major nutrition bill that we have, not only for low-income families, but for student lunch programs, for senior meal programs. And so that's another important component of the Farm Bill, along with the agriculture research programs that exist. And we have some of the premier research institutes in the entire world right here in Wisconsin doing cutting-edge agriculture research. Earlier this week, I was up at River Falls in the agriculture department meeting with the faculty and some of the undergrads who are doing undergraduate ag research. They're doing incredible things and spin-off opportunities that are leading to new businesses and jobs being created. The same is true down in Platteville. And Wisconsin is the premier research school in the world when it comes to biofuels research right now. So if we do this right, Wisconsin could play a unique role as far as agricultural research breakthroughs, but also the next generation of energy that we can produce ourselves here in the United States so we're not so addicted to the oil prices as they go up, like we're seeing today.
And you're listening to Newsmakers. My guest today is Congressman Ron Kind. We are also joined by other members of the media. And our next question comes from Brad Williams of Wisdom Radio.
We're going to move a little into politics and election season right now. I read a column by George Will recently where he was saying it doesn't really matter who wins the presidential election, in his view, as long as Republicans control Congress, because he figures then they'd be in a win-win situation. If the president turns out to be Republican, they get what they want. If Obama gets a second term, we get to stop him. Have you heard that theory much, or how much stock do you put in it?
Well, I don't put much stock in it. Obviously, whoever's president of the United States has a tremendous influence over the direction of our country, not only what's happening at home here, but abroad. And so it's a very important position, and who sits in the White House and the Oval Office has to make some very difficult decisions. I mean, there's a reason why Harry Truman put the sign, "The buck stops here," on his desk, and it's true. The easy decisions seldom reach the president. It's only the most difficult, almost unresolvable issues that they have to grapple with and ultimately have to come up with an answer for. So who's occupying the Oval Office has a tremendous effect on our country and on our future. But there are also certain programs that are coming up that are going to be immensely important in regards to the budget deficit, for instance. At the end of this year, as an example, the 2001-2003 Bush tax cuts are going to expire. And unless you have a president sitting there who is just going to renew it all, that's going to change the dynamics in regards to those tax cuts. And I happen to agree with President Obama that fundamentally it's not right or fair that we have multi-billionaires in this country paying a lower effective tax rate than most working families or even the receptionists in their own firms. That's wrong. And they have to be contributing their fair share as well. Nor is it right that virtually every small business here in western Wisconsin is paying a higher effective tax rate than virtually every Fortune 500 company because of the powerful special interests that reside in Washington that get these tax loopholes and special tax provisions included in the tax code that unfortunately stays there then. And that leads to inequities in regards to our revenue system. So those are some big decisions that are going to be coming up. And I disagree with George Will when he thinks that, you know, the checks and balances that does exist in our democracy really doesn't matter.
This is a time of year early in the year when people who watch Washington like to give out report cards. I'll ask you. What would you give as a grade to Congress the last 2 years, the way it's been split, the kind of bickering that's been going on, and do you see realistically any improvement in getting things done in the next 2 years?
Well, I think this has not been Congress's finest hour, and it would certainly be very close to a failing grade because there needs to be more of a mindset that democracy and policymaking has to be a give-and-take process. It's not just your way or no way at all. And unfortunately, too many of my new colleagues that have joined the Congress have come in with that my way or no way at all, and I'm going to shut the place down, which jeopardizes a lot of things for our nation. I mean, the whole fiasco of the debt ceiling debate last summer was just that. I mean, the idea that the United States of America would default on its obligations for the first time in our nation's history was nonsensical. And yet many of my colleagues were willing to take that risk at a time when people were literally paying us to take their money by investing in our treasury notes and bonds. And given the inflation rate, by doing that, they're losing money by investing in the United States of America. That would have been changed overnight if we had defaulted once on those obligations. And I don't think too many of my colleagues had a strong appreciation of what they were advocating and the consequence of that being. There needs to be more, you know, compromise in the legislative process. I think there needs to be more independent thinking in the legislative process. I'm encouraging my colleagues to don't sign pledges, because once you sign a pledge, no matter what it's for, you're basically giving that special interest group your voting card, and you're telling your constituents, I'm done thinking now because I signed this pledge and I'm not going to change with the changing facts. And we need that ability to be able to adapt and change to different circumstances as they confront us. But I've been proud in a recent voter survey that showed that I was the fifth most independent voting member of the entire Congress, fifth out of 435. Now, some might criticize me for not being number one. The one who was actually number one was Ron Paul. And the only reason he was number one is because he votes against everything. So, of course, he's going to be independent. No one can touch him. But I think we need more of that type of independence, not just in Washington, but in Madison these days, and also back home. I think you're seeing this kind of poisonous political discourse seeping into county board meetings, council meetings, school board meetings that we hadn't seen in the recent past.
Our conversation with Congressman Ron Kind will continue in just a few minutes. You can catch a glimpse into his future political plans, and he'll also address the role the federal government plays in some current state issues. I want to thank Wisconsin Public Radio's Steve Roysom and WISM Radio's Brad Williams for also asking questions. Listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. We also welcome your comments and ideas. Simply follow the links on our archives page at wpr.org/lacrosse. Newsmakers is also now on Facebook. Updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Like us at WPR Newsmakers on Facebook.